Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in the Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Wednesday, November 28th. Loaded pod coming up. We have, as we usually do, Phil Steele batting leadoff. He has three plays for this championship weekend. Then John Murray of the Superbook at the Westgate in Las Vegas. Mr. Director will have a few plays that the sportsbook is positioning itself to need based on the sharp bets they have taken. And Mike Clay makes a guest appearance on the College Football Pod, really just doing his NFL props on this pod because we did not have them posted in time for yesterday when we had to tape the NFL podcast. So Mike's got three plays, one of for each of the island games, the Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night NFL games, all really good games, I think. So Mike will have a play for there at each of those, and plenty of college talk as well straight ahead, and we'll also recap Tiger and Phil.
Stop. Hammer time.
He's back. Phil Steele back with us here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Phil, how was your Thanksgiving?
Just great, Doug. And how about yours?
Well, went 1-2 again on Saturday. But actual Thanksgiving, I gave out the Mississippi State Egg Bowl hammer time that I loved. That came through with flying colors. So 2-2, not the end of the world.
Yeah, 2-2, and especially with the season you're having, I believe it's sort of been following along. I think it's something like 25-12 this year.
Yeah, if you add the Thursday thing, that's what it is. And it's, look, I'm annoyed because I got on the Alabama bandwagon again against Auburn. I thought my concern was, like, you know, Auburn would have all their trick play nonsense, but Alabama had a chance up 10 with the ball, and they went with 3rd and 4. They ran the ball. It was like the stupidest thing I've ever. They had a chance to get that touchdown right before half, and, you know, cover, front door cover, and it was just weird. And of course, they unloaded second half, but I was disappointed with that Bama first half pick.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been good to you all year, so I think if you add it up in your overall record, it's come out pretty good for you this year. But the streak is over, Doug, so
I know
we don't need to.
Well, I had Notre Dame as well, and that was just a weird game. Look, they were lucky to be potentially covering it late because of the USC turnovers, but Notre Dame also had chances in the second half to blow it open, and they didn't. So strange game, maybe playing a little tight given that the playoff was on the line.
You know, and last week on your podcast, they gave out five plays, went 3-2, and the two losses, both games, I had the lead and the ball, and then fumble returns for touchdowns cost them both in the game. So it was a tough way to go out there with Texas A&M coming up a half point short.
That was a wild game. That is safe to say could have gone either way, right?
Yeah, well, middle of the third quarter, I'm completely comfortable. I mean, it's Texas A&M dominating, got the ball, we're up by 7, we're on our way to an easy win. Then once the fumble return for a touchdown happened, tied the game, and then the whole thing was thrown into utter chaos in those overtime periods. Boy, there had to be a lot of ups and downs going through the overtimes.
Well, that's betting, right? So, you know,
yeah,
broken record,
no
we
doubt.
Are, and, you know, play the violin. All right, it is what it is, but 3-2 out of you. Solid job. You'll take that every week.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Well, it's championship weekend. There's always a lot of variables here. And let's start with the Big Ten title game. We think Ohio State needs help from Oklahoma and Texas. We think, but stranger things have happened, even going back to year one of the playoff where the Buckeyes absolutely waxed Wisconsin. Now, they had a third-string quarterback, so they kind of had to prove that they were worthy with Cardell Jones at the helm. But here they're laying two touchdowns to Northwestern, which is a covering machine as an underdog with Fitz.
Yeah, Northwestern, one of the best underdog teams out there under Coach Fitz. And they play the level of their competition. I know that coming in. If they're taking on a good team, they usually play them tight. If they're taking on a bad team, they usually play them tight as well. So they're a team that's great as an underdog, but they've got major flaws this year when I look at this squad. In fact, on the season, despite the fact Northwestern comes in here unbeaten, by the way, in Big Ten play, perfect 9-0, 100% Big Ten play. They're actually minus 27 yards per game in Big Ten play. I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
How do
you get a 9-0 team that's minus 27 yards per game? And if you look at Ohio State on the flip side, they've got that one loss this year, but in Big Ten play, outgaining opponents by 120 yards per game, 145 yards per game on the season. So clearly, Ohio State the better team. So I think Northwestern's been doing it with a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Now, Ohio State's defense, when they take on some big-time playmakers, you know, like Purdue had some playmakers, Maryland, they give up some big yards, they give up some big points. But when they took on a pedestrian offense like Michigan State a few weeks back, held them to 274 yards, 12 first downs for the game. Well, let's look at Northwestern's offense. I mean, for the season, these guys are averaging 3 yards a carry. That's 3.0. That's one of the lower per carries. And I know Isaiah Bauer has emerged lately, but even with his emergence, they only had 2.4 yards per carry against Minnesota, 2.7 against Notre Dame. So it's not like they're lighting it up. And then throwing the football, Clayton Thorson, the last 6 weeks, thrown for about 150 yards per game with a 3-4 ratio. So they don't have an explosive pass attack, don't have a dynamic run attack, and Ohio State does have a very good defensive line. I think as long as they're not giving up the big plays, they can shut a team down. Meanwhile, on the flip side of the coin, Northwestern's defense, far from dominant, giving up 373 yards per game this year. When you look at Ohio State, they are number two in the country. Everybody talks about Oklahoma's offense. Everybody talks about Alabama's offense. They are 1 and 3, but right in between them is Ohio State. Ohio State gains 165 yards per game above what their opponents come in allowing. So if you allow 400 yards per game, they're going to gain 565 on you. This is a team that's running the football well as of late. You look at their last two games. They just put up 567 yards on the best defense in the country, and I've been waiting for the light switch to go on for Ohio State all year, waiting for them to play their talent level. They finally did last week, and then you brought it up. The last time they got into this situation where they're in the Big Ten title game and they need a big-time win, they took on Wisconsin. Spread was reasonable. They won that game 59-0. They know they need to put them on Northwestern to impress the committee. They know they need a big defensive showing to show they're a complete team. Add it all up. I like Ohio State to win this one by more than the two touchdowns, and they have incentive late in the game to put an extra one on.
Yeah, we know Urban Meyer is not afraid to run up the score. Quick clarification, Northwestern 8-1 in conference play, not 9-0. Sorry. They did lose to Michigan, obviously, in that tight game.
Sorry,
they led.
That.
No, that's fine. Just you knew that. But who's the best team Northwestern's beaten? What, like Whiskey? It's a very misleading Big Ten, and I think we kind of – we're learning after the fact that Michigan at 10-1 entering last weekend was a little bit of fool's gold, just given that it was a down year for the Big Ten by their standard they set the last few years. Penn State, not as great as they have been in recent years. And Wisconsin, certainly not as good as they were in years past. I mean, they're 7-5 right now. So this was a little bit of fool's gold with Michigan's defense shutting down offenses until they faced Ohio State.
Well, I still think Michigan's defense is clearly one of the best in the country.
Really?
I think when you look at them in the bowl game, they're going to come out and just shut down whoever they play in the bowl game. So I'm not thinking that Michigan's defense was fool's gold, but I do look at Northwestern's schedule. When they played Wisconsin, they took on a backup quarterback. So I'm going to say their best win of the season was at Iowa, where they won the game by 4 points. I think Iowa's an underrated team. They are a complete team, and they were at home. So I'm going to say that was their best win of the season. But at Iowa and Ohio State, playing the way they did last week are two different animals.
And you think Ohio State, sort of, you mentioned the light switch going up. Like, you think they figured it all out? They're all of a sudden back?
I think that they have that opportunity. And like, yeah. I said, defensively, anytime they've taken on a big-time playmaker, like, you know, coming into the Maryland game, I had some staff meetings here. I'm saying, watch Anthony McFarland. He's probably going to have a big day. This guy's a dynamic player, 81, 75-yard runs, and Ohio State was reeling the entire game on defense. But when they don't have that dynamic playmaker to slow down, then their defense plays a lot better, like against Michigan State.
Sounds good. All right, let's go to another high-profile game that certainly Big Ten fans, or really Ohio State fans, will be keeping an eye on, and that's Big 12 championship game, the Red River rematch. Texas,
wow,
and Oklahoma, and we know the Longhorns got the Sooners earlier this season, And it's interesting, for all as great as Kyler Murray is at most of the time, he does turn the ball over. He gets a little sloppy with some of the passes and then does not always protect the ball as effectively as he maybe should. But here are the Sooners laying 8, where their defense has let him down the last few weeks and against the number. And you like the Longhorns. You like the dog here.
Yeah, I absolutely do, and for numerous reasons. First of all, when these two met back on October 6th, back on my ESPN article, I used Texas plus the 8. They, of course, won that game outright 48-45. Now, Oklahoma is one of the nation's most potent offenses, no doubt about it. In fact, they ranked number one in my category of outgaining opponent averages this year by 202 yards per game. Kyler Murray doing a great job. But defensively, wow. Do you know in the last 3 weeks, they're giving up 623 yards per game. And one of those opponents was Kansas, for crying out loud.
Unreal.
They are allowing teams 182 yards per game, more than what they come in averaging. Now, Texas has 3 losses this year, but they've been by 5, 3, and 1 point. So you have Texas not getting blown out in any game. Meanwhile, Oklahoma, in their past 4 games, they've won their 4 games by 6 points per game. Unfortunately, they were favored by an average of 18 points per game. So they're 0-3-1 against the spread, and all the games have been much closer, 12 points closer than expected. Now let's look at the series history. 5 of the last 5 meetings have all been decided by 7 points or less. Texas has covered 6 in a row. So you've got the series history going for you. You've got current form for both teams going for you. And then we throw in the Tom Herman underdog factor. This guy, since he's been a head coach, has been underdog 14 times. How about 13-1 against the spread? And 10 times he has pulled the outright upset. And then all the talk is going to be about Kyler Murray, but Sam Ehlinger is having a heck of a season. In fact, he did have 2 interceptions last week. That stopped a 10-game streak of not throwing an interception. He's got 23 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. He's run for 376. And he's also been a little banged up and should be about as healthy as he's been as of late. Texas, of course, has a better defense, holding opponents to 36 yards per game below their season average. So better defense, series, current form, Tom Herman, add it all up. I'm taking the dog in this one with Texas to either keep this closer than expected or even pull the upset.
Hard to fault you there, just given Tom Herman's success in the underdog role. And then, like you alluded to, this series history, at least recent series history, has gone the way of the Longhorns in this one with the points. So I'm at a point where, after seeing last weekend's shootout, I cannot lay points at all with Oklahoma.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, you go into the Oklahoma State game, they're about a 3-touchdown favorite, and Oklahoma State blew that 2-point conversion at the end. You go to the Texas Tech game, once again, about a 3-touchdown favorite, only pull out a 5-point win. The Kansas game, how has Kansas put up 40 points on anybody this year?
It's an embarrassment. What we thought was a flat spot. Oklahoma has not covered in over a month. It's been over a month since they covered. A push last week, technically, as the line closed 3. A lot of people got less than 3, but still, like, it's just insane. But anyways, really interesting handicap here, and horrible story with Mackenzie Milton, the quarterback of Central Florida, out with that gruesome injury in last week's game. So now we got a backup, and Central Florida facing Memphis for the conference title. And, you know, people can say a chance at the playoff. I say no chance given Milton's injury. But you like the dog here in that case.
Yeah, and it's not completely due to the fact that Mackenzie Milton's out. In fact, I usually use a quarterback injury system, which says teams over, you know, come in and play a lot harder when their star player is out. The line moves, which it did in this game. UCF only a 3-point favorite at home. Earlier, they were a 5-point road favorite at Memphis. But to me, it's more of how the defenses are playing right now, the series history, and the fact that Memphis knows they can play with UCF. First of all, let's look at the defenses. Right now, in conference play, UCF giving up 215 yards per game on the ground, 4.5 yards per carry. Memphis a lot tougher defensively, just 155 on the ground, 3.7. They gave up a lower completion percentage. They get more sacks. I think Memphis has got the better defense. Offensively, I love the weapons they have. Darrell Henderson is an explosive running back. I mean, he averages 8.7 yards per carry. But the more I watch this guy, he's a powerful back, too. It takes a couple guys to bring him down. So he really is a complete running back. They also have Patrick Taylor, Tony Pollard, who's a wide receiver they put up in the backfield sometimes or give it to him on the jet sweep. All three of those guys can take it to the house anytime. They've combined for 33 rush touchdowns this year. So an explosive offense for Memphis. Now, these two met earlier in the year, and Mackenzie Milton was playing, and Memphis led 30-17 at the half, appeared on their way to a win. UCF rallied back, even getting out game. They came back and won the game by one. And then last year, UCF, I thought, had a great team last year, one that they awarded themselves the national championship. And in that game last year for the title, which was at UCF, Memphis took them to overtime, two overtimes, as a matter of fact, came up just short in the game. So I think we have a very good, very underrated Memphis team, one that's playing in good current form. Just blew out Houston last week for us. They won by 21. They've got the offense. They've got the edge on defense. And they won't be intimidated. Playing here last year for the conference championship, knowing they went to overtime, I think Memphis plus the points is the play here.
I watched that Memphis game. It, you know, if Central Florida, this is prior to the Milton injury, I was saying if they really wanted to be a top four team, you can't barely beat these teams. Like, you have to just pummel them because Memphis's D is awful. Now, you and I were texting during the game because you were on Memphis minus the points last week, and they pulled away and it was a nice win, but they have to bury these teams. And I just feel you got to score more against a Memphis D like that if you want to consider yourself a top four team.
Yeah, and, you know, Memphis last week did give up 394 total yards, but put up 610. They had numerous mistakes in that first half, which, as you know, I was getting a little frustrated on. Felt Memphis could easily have been up by more, but as it turned out, it worked out pretty good.
All right, my man. Well, very good stuff there. I got to come up with my plays, and I like a shootout in the SEC title game, Alabama and Georgia. We saw what happened to Georgia's defense last year against Oklahoma when they faced a powerful spread offense with tempo, and I think Bama can do that to them, and I think Bama's going to have to put up points. I don't think Tua will be sitting in the fourth quarter of this one.
No, he definitely won't. So you do have an advantage in that respect. What is the total on that game coming in?
In the neighborhood of 63.
63.5. Okay. Now, I think there's one team out there that doesn't fear Alabama. It would be Georgia because they led last year's game at the half. Felt it was, they were in control of the game, ended up losing in overtime, but they know they can come here and play. They'll have a slight crowd edge, much like they did in the national championship game. And I think Georgia's got a good run game, as you touched on. Their offense should be able to move. They got 260 yards per game on the ground, 6.3, and then you've got Jake Fromm with a 24-5 ratio this year. I do think Alabama wins the game and probably wins it by at least the two-touchdown spread because I think they'll control the line of scrimmage. I'm going to go back to the matchup of the LSU. Both teams traveled to Death Valley this year. Georgia got outgained on the ground, 275-113, outgained overall by 154 yards. Alabama went into LSU, took on the same offensive and defensive fronts, and had a dominant 281-12 rush edge, outgained LSU by 380 yards. So I think Alabama is better at the line of scrimmage for this one, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I like the Tide in this, but I could see your thought process on that as far as the over goes.
I mean, I think Georgia knows they're not going to win a slugfest, right? Like, Bama's going to get its points, and I don't think they're going to let up in the second half, unless it's a total blowout and I'm wrong, but that's where I'm leaning at least early. Now, I'm trying to figure out if Clemson minus the points is the right way. It's a big number. It's a big number, but Clemson's a machine. They're a machine, and I think we've seen it the last couple of years. They sort of ratchet things up this time of year. I was at the ACC title game a year ago, and they just buried South Carolina as well. So I'm thinking they might bury Pitt as well.
Well, going back to last year's ACC title game, that was one where I think Miami completely shot itself in the foot. I mean, Clemson only had 331 yards offense, but won it 38-3. Miami was down their top two receivers coming in, and I believe a top running back as well. And Clemson just ended up with only 117-yard edge. They dominated the game start to finish. They didn't have to do a lot in the second half. And the advantage against Pitt is the fact that Pitt needs to run the football to win. And if they don't run the football, they're not going to win. Clemson's got an outstanding run defense, allowing 85 yards per game on the ground, 2.2 yards per carry. Only once all year has Kenny Pickett even topped 197 yards passing, or 200 yards passing, you could say. He's got 12-5 ratio. Pitt's going to have to run to win. Clemson should be able to take away the run. Clemson, coming into the year, had a very poor record as a 20.5 or more point conference favorite, which they fall into for this one. I pretty much have this one around 28-31, but wouldn't be one of my stronger plays of the week.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to find some. Maybe I'll just do one play, given that there's games on Friday as well. So I only have a handful of games. I shouldn't have to come up with three on Saturday.
No, you shouldn't have to come up with three. Put your foot down, Doug. It's a limited card for
take a knee on that record, right? Just do one and finish off the season. All right, bud. Well, there's a lot of moving parts here. Can anyone stay with Alabama?
Yeah, I think they can. I think Clemson definitely can.
Yeah.
When you look at Clemson, they're a team that has the defensive front to definitely harass Alabama. You look at them offensively, Clemson's a very balanced team. They've got NTN at the running back spot. Trevor Lawrence gets more and more comfortable every week. And, you know, if you're worried about a freshman quarterback in the national championship game, I'm not worried about it. We saw two redshirt freshmen going at it last year in the second half. And Lawrence got a 22-4 ratio. Can also hurt you with his legs. So, and they've got a good offensive line. Like I said, the defensive line is one of the best in the country. They run the ball well, throw the ball well. I think Clemson can definitely stay with Alabama.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get that matchup. If both teams take care of business this weekend, we'll eventually get it in the college football playoff.
Yeah, that sounds good, Doug. And best of luck choosing your one team for this week.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, bud, and we'll connect ahead of the Bulls as well.
All right. Talk to you later, Doug, and I'm sure I'll be texting you during the games.
Oh, yeah, we'll sweat these out together. All right, so that's three plays from Phil Steele: Ohio State minus 14, Texas plus 8 to Oklahoma, and Memphis plus 3.5. You should be able to get the hook at the time of this taping, which is Wednesday afternoon. So those three plays, thanks to Phil Steele, as always. And we will check in with Mr. Director John Murray of the Superbook in a moment. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcasts. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail, using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. It couldn't be easier. Print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage you can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. Now, I use Stamps.com because I send things all the time in the mail, and you don't know how much it costs, and you have to go wait in line. It can just be a headache. Right now, you can enjoy it too. Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BETS. That's Stamps.com. Enter BETS.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Mr. Director, back for more here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Championship weekend, we need the assistance from behind the counter. How are you?
Good, man. How are you guys doing today?
Well, it sounds like we're doing better than you are after having a lengthy meeting, the suit that you are.
Yeah, just a very busy time of year around here, guys, trying to get our ducks in a row here with the year coming to an end. But it was kind of an up-and-down weekend for us. We did very well in college football, though. I can tell you guys, the Notre Dame-USC game, that was one of our biggest decisions of the year in college football, and ended up going our way late USC touchdown to cover the point spread there.
Oh, I know that too well. I was at a restaurant sweating that one out. That was one of my picks I gave out on SportsCenter. It was a hammer time for me as well. Weird game. Neither team should have covered. That's kind of how I assess it.
I thought USC deserved that cover. I mean, Notre Dame really was only covering for about 2 minutes in that game.
Right, but I think the second half, Notre Dame completely outplayed them. USC has only scored 10 points now in the second half, so the last three games combined, they've been just sort of a disaster. Notre Dame shot itself in the foot in the second half. But to your point, USC dominated the first half, had those two turnovers as well. That was the right side for most of the game for sure.
Yeah, and it was just, there were so many parlays going to the Irish, a lot of big straight bets on the Irish. It really mushroomed and became a huge decision. So we were all keeping our eyes on that one. And from what I saw on social media from some of the other sportsbook people around town, every book in town had a massive liability on that game. So
look at the line move.
A welcome cover there.
Yeah, went from 9.5 to 14.
It didn't deter people at all. I mean, we had guys even at the very end that were laying 13, 13.5 when they could have laid 10 all week. It was into the week, I should say. I mean, it was a huge, huge line move, and it wasn't deterring anybody.
A mutual friend of ours texted me before the game and said, any chance Notre Dame loses, I want to hammer this money line. I said, go for it. And I felt a little bad the first quarter and change.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think it was 10 to nothing. Wasn't it 10 to nothing USC at one point? I mean, I think the live money line on that game probably got into the pick'em area. I wasn't really following the live market that closely, but
I saw 4.5. I saw 4.5.
Oh, that's as low as it got?
But I wasn't checking every timeout either. So
right. Yeah, neither was I. But I would imagine that at some point, maybe not pick them, but that Notre Dame was only a small favorite.
Yeah, I think the money line he got was 550. So that's quite the change. But you know what? Never in doubt.
Sweat.
Two touchdowns. Well,
Yeah. Easy.
Okay, so we have a lot of interesting games, I think. Where's the house positioning itself on the Big Ten, Big 12, SEC championship games?
Well, I can tell you we've seen some sharp money in two of those games. We had a sharp group took Georgia plus 13.5 for the SEC championship game. There has certainly been some buyback on Alabama. It's not like we need to get out of line to write money on the Crimson Tide. So we're actually back at 13.5 right now on that game. Haven't really seen that much on the Oklahoma game, to be honest with you. Texas-Oklahoma, not a whole lot of action either way. Keeping an eye on the Texas quarterback situation. One game we are booking to need is Saturday, the AAC championship game between Memphis and Central Florida. We all thought this number would be more like a pick'em without Central Florida quarterback Mackenzie Milton in there. Some of the offshore books opened this game, Central Florida -7, which we thought was crazy. Right now we've got it at Central Florida -3 against Memphis, and we're booking it to win on the Memphis Tigers side. We think that they're going to win that game on Saturday afternoon.
So 7 was bought down or was it reposted? Because I can't imagine.
I don't know. It was one of those books offshore that I think kind of rushes to be first to market. I'm not sure what they do in terms of how much money they actually take at numbers like that. But we saw 7 out there, which we thought was just completely wrong, frankly. We opened at 4.5 and we took some money. And now it's all the way down to 3. So we're in a pretty good shape on that game right now.
You know, it's pretty fascinating if you're into this stuff. The live wagering market, once Milton's injury occurred, there were like 7-point gaps. I mean, I saw like 21.5 and 20.5 on Central Florida at that juncture of the game. And then I saw some 14.5 at BetCris. So there were some.
That might be a computer program. That could be a computer program that doesn't take into account injuries. That's why you always have to have a human element in the room.
Right. And which Chris did,
it sounds like. The computer doesn't know that Anthony Davis left the game, that Mackenzie Milton left the game. So you've always got to have a person watching very closely on stuff like that.
And I mean, look, they ended up covering that 20.5, but I still think the sharp number was 14.5, given the injury to Milton, who was a Heisman in the Heisman conversation, at least. So, I mean, just the
fact and they look like a very different team without Mackenzie Milton. Their offense looked very different. Obviously, there's a big difference between rushing a guy into a game due to an injury and giving a guy a full week of practice with the starters, getting starter reps. We'll see what happens this weekend, but I think Memphis could be a live dog play on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's interesting, though, and we talked about it with Phil Steele. Just you see teams rally around that, and it's not like Memphis has got a good defense. So I've seen this happen before where Central Florida could blow them out.
Speaking of that happened before, we took a sharp bet on Ohio State, minus 14. They're playing Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game. One thing that I have seen happen before, guys, is Urban Meyer running up the score in the Big Ten championship game to propel his team into the college football playoff. We saw that in 2014. The Buckeyes, if they can, are certainly going to win this game by as much as they possibly can on Saturday.
You know, it's interesting. I spoke with Ed Sammons, your colleague at the Superbook, and some other odds makers, and the consensus is that Oklahoma is about a point better than Ohio State. So certainly some, you know, you can sway some voters, if you will. This is the final push for both programs, and we'll see if maybe OU, let's say OU wins, but it's a bad defensive effort, and then there's a dominant performance again from Ohio State. It's sort of like validating what you suspected all year that, okay, now they flip the switch.
I think the biggest difference between this week and 2014, TCU and Baylor were the two teams at the top of the Big 12 in 2014. They didn't have a final stage to convince the voters that they deserved a spot in the playoff. Ohio State did. They beat Wisconsin by, I think, 60 points, while TCU and Baylor were idle. No matter what Ohio State does on Saturday, Oklahoma has their own stage against Texas to avenge their only loss of the year and potentially put up a huge blowout of their own. So it's really very, very interesting to see what happens there. And the SEC championship game is interesting, too, because you could argue that in some ways Alabama might be better off losing because it would get a second SEC school into the playoff. I think Alabama would still safely be in the playoff.
But would Alabama want that? No.
I don't know.
They want the one seed because otherwise they'd have to play Clemson.
You think they'd go in as the four? Yeah, we've had that discussion.
So,
see, I think that the committee would get cute to avoid having Alabama and Clemson play each other in the semifinal, but I could be wrong about that, certainly.
Yeah, it's done differently. It's not done in order like we would normally think it would be. It's done with like pods and stuff. But the question is, and when we discussed it before, I was adamant that Alabama would not get in. And the reason I said that is because if we were assuming Michigan went one out, right? And Michigan having its lone loss week one at Notre Dame was definitely more excusable than Ohio State's beatdown to Purdue. This is different. A lot depends. I'm not saying Alabama's out or in. I don't think they'd be in. So I am saying that, I guess. But it would have to be – it depends on the scores of the game. I just think that the committee has to reward conference championships like it does. And if Alabama lost this game, how convinced are we that they're that great? I think they are. But if
I'm
they
pretty
lost,
convinced.
Right, but like – okay, so they won at LSU. That's their best win?
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying, but just the way they're winning, you have to take into that account the way they're winning.
Against
it's not
bad
like
teams.
Sneaking by.
Right, but against teams – like they waxed Missouri.
Bad teams.
Tennessee's not bowl eligible. Tennessee's not bowl eligible.
I'm not going to go out and call LSU, Mississippi State, Texas A&M bad teams.
Those were their three best wins. Those were their three best wins. I'm just saying if they lose, then it makes you reconsider. That's all. Like I think there's no chance. I think they're the best team in the country. I think they're going to easily. I think they're winning it all. But if they lost, everyone's like, well, what if they lost to Auburn? This is going into last weekend. Well, if they lose Auburn, maybe we got to reassess. Like, I'm reassessing how good the Big Ten is. Maybe I'm reassessing Michigan's dominant defense when they went and shut down teams like Wisconsin and teams that weren't as good as they were in years past, like Penn State. The Big Ten was really good in recent years, not this year. I am reassessing, based on what happened last week, how good Michigan's defense is. Thus, if Alabama lost, I am reassessing everything. Now, I think Georgia is really good. And going back to the conversation I had with Ed Sammons, he thinks Georgia would be about a 6-point favorite over Oklahoma. So he thinks Georgia is the third best team in the country. And all three of those teams would be favored over Notre Dame, which we all assume is already in. So I get that Vegas power rankings aren't the only determining factor, but it really is interesting how Vegas perceives it. And then obviously the committee has to take into account conference championships and schedule strength and all the other variables.
Well, Alabama, if they were to lose, they would certainly have the best loss, quote unquote, losing to Georgia in Atlanta. Georgia is not the end of the world. I don't think Georgia is 6 points better than Oklahoma and Ohio State. I don't agree with Ed on that, but I do think they are the third best team in the country. I think that they're right after Alabama and Clemson. I think the most interesting scenario, what if Oklahoma, Georgia, and Ohio State all lose on Saturday? Then who gets in as the fourth team? I'm assuming that Clemson takes care of business against Pittsburgh.
Well, I would have assumed that's the path for Central Florida. However, Mackenzie Milton's injury changes everything. Now, if they go out and crush Memphis, you could maybe argue that their backup quarterback's good and all that. Like, that's another narrative that could take place. Because
that'd be interesting. If they blew out Memphis, maybe they could get in. It's hard for me to imagine them getting in. I actually think that in that scenario, they'd give it to Georgia.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that.
But then that would create a problem too, though. Then you're talking about, let's say Georgia's the 4 seed, then they would just run it back against Alabama on December 29th and play the same game over again. I can't imagine that's what the committee wants there either.
Well, that's why
kind of
I hate
hard
it.
To avoid.
Right. Unless they put Georgia as the three team.
Yeah, but how are they going to have Georgia jump Notre Dame after a loss to Alabama?
Well, if they looked good against Alabama. Right?
Yeah. I mean that's certainly, I guess that's possible. It's just hard for me to believe that they would jump over an undefeated team with 2 losses. I don't think this is going to happen.
Right.
I'm pretty confident that either Ohio State or Oklahoma is going to win on Saturday. They probably will both win on Saturday. But either way, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out. And I still think Clemson is the team that's sitting pretty because they are most likely going to rout Pittsburgh on Saturday, and then they're very likely to play against Notre Dame in the semifinal game.
What would that line be?
We talked about that one a little bit. I made it Clemson 13. Ed said he thinks it's 11.5 to 13. He gave me a broad window there. But
wouldn't that be nice if you could put more point spreads like that?
I'm trying to be exact, DK. But I think, you know, we were right in the exact same ballpark. So that's one we do agree on. A lot would depend on how bad Clemson wins on Saturday, because that's like their last chance to make an impression. But I do think Clemson would be short of a 2-touchdown favorite, but a double-digit favorite.
You might need to give Ed some advice.
I'm going to tell you what I think, man. If you don't like it, that's fine. But, you know, don't ask me a question if you don't want my answer.
There you go. That's advice.
Ed does that all the time. He'll ask me something. He'll pull me in the back. He'll ask me a question. I'm like, here's what I think. No. I'm like, well, then why? What am I doing back here then? Why'd you even ask me? a lot of NFL arguments, if you can believe that.
So I speak with that clip, that drop originated with your incident with Mitch and Pauly's show. Easy for me to say.
Oh, geez.
What was that, a 1-week suspension? What's up with that?
Actually, I went home for Thanksgiving, so I told them I couldn't do the show. But, you know, Mitch and Pauly, in their, you know, infinite maturity, they sold it as a 1-week suspension to me.
Yeah, Pauly bench. He suspended me for like 6 months, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a suspension. I was back home with my family in Virginia, but Paulie's going out there telling the world that I was suspended for a week. It's very sad. Very sad.
Sports radio, you can't trust it. Any other positions you guys are taking?
Sharp bets, Northern Illinois +3.5. That's the MAC championship game on Friday night. They're playing Buffalo in Detroit, Michigan. We like Northern Illinois in that game. We've been inviting some money on Buffalo. We're positioning ourselves to need Northern Illinois. Another sharp bet we took in a less high-profile game, a group laid South Carolina -28.5 against Akron. That line is up to 30.5 on the Gamecocks.
Interesting. So we're up against the clock a little bit, so we'll table the college football. By the way, I should have mentioned yesterday, this is like one of the bigger takeaways. Prince of Props, I love that prop so much. I gave it out on SportsCenter. So I actually took it and texted you.
I happened to be watching it, and I took a picture of it. I was at my mom's house in Great Falls, Virginia, and I had SportsCenter on. And I saw that, and I screenshotted it, and I sent it to him. He got a good laugh out of that.
So you just mentioned your mom's house, and you mentioned a prop that you loved.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
You should have put that on the prop over.
Yeah, I didn't like it that much, but I thought it was a pretty good pick. And you know what? To the Prince's credit, he said it would win by halftime, and it did.
Yes.
Well, McCoy had a touchdown and a pick in the first half. By halftime, we were already counting our money on that one, man. It's pretty good.
Mike Clay's on this podcast because of the scheduling this week, so we're going to ask him how he thinks about, you know, the potential of getting Wally pipped here with the Prince of Props. So hopefully no real concern.
Long way to go. Mike Clay does an excellent job, so we got a long way to go there.
All right. First, basically, sports betting history in Las Vegas last weekend, Tiger Phil showdown. What can you tell us about how it all unfolded out there at the sportsbook?
You know, I'd call the handle disappointing. I told David Purdom of ESPN that we did about 2% of the Mayweather-McGregor handle on the Tiger Phil match, and I chalked it up to the time of the sports calendar. Such a busy week that we had Thanksgiving week with NFL, NBA, college football, college basketball. There just wasn't enough interest in it betting-wise. But we ended up having it on sound here in the book on Friday, the Superbook. And from what I hear, there were huge crowds of people watching and cheering for every shot. And I have to admit, I was guilty of on my flight back to Las Vegas on Friday afternoon. I had it on my iPad, and I was watching it. I thought it was somewhat compelling. The side bet stuff was compelling. But it looked like people were more just watching it versus actually putting, you know, large amounts of money on it.
Okay, so a launching pad for maybe future endeavors, and maybe we have other sports that are keeping an eye. Maybe we'll get a one-on-one match with, I don't know, Greek Freak and Kawhi or something. Who knows, right? Like, it could be the start of something that's very specific and maybe leads to some other pay-per-view situations.
I heard it was a very cool thing to be at because, like, everybody there was invited to be there. So if you were walking around at Shadow Creek and you saw somebody that looked like a famous person, it's because that was that famous person. There was very few nobodies, so to speak, at Shadow Creek on Friday.
Well, another reason it's cool to be there is because no one can go to Shadow Creek. It's, like, impossible to get on the course. So just being invited there is
very difficult.
A win in and of itself. Mr. Director, how was did you have the Mr. Musburger appearance yet? Is that today?
That's today. Every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, 6 Eastern, me and Brent Musburger release the Super Contest lines, and I have to find a pick for him. Some point today, I'll have to prioritize that. I got a few other things I'm working on right now, but Mr. Musburger is always a priority for me. So, and you know, he's only I think a half a game out of the money in the Super Contest.
Pressure's on, Mr. Director. Do you have any early leans for that pick?
Well, you know, I always like the Cleveland Browns.
Right,
right. They're certainly in the mix. Other than that, I'll have to take a closer look at it. I still have a few hours to come up with something, though. The pressure is on, though. I can't lie.
All right, understandably. Best of luck with that, and thank you for your time, as always. We appreciate it, and, you know, let's get it done this weekend.
Big weekend. Don't forget Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, heavyweight title fight on Saturday night. I know we talked about it last week. We booked to need Tito Ortiz on Saturday in that ridiculous fight with Chuck Liddell. We're going to book to need Deontay Wilder in Saturday's heavyweight title fight with Tyson Fury. Should be the most heavyweight title fight of at least the last 3 or 4 years.
So you want to be on the side of Wilder. You trusted the bets coming in, the sharp bets coming
in. Guys I've talked to that I believe in have told me that they think Wilder's going to knock him out, and I've seen some sharper players take Wilder, but there's been a lot of two-way money on this fight, guys. There's been a lot of money on Tyson Fury, too, so it's been a very well-bet fight, and I think we'll see more of that into the weekend. We're going to try to, you know, win a nice, not a huge decision. It is a heavyweight fight. Heavyweight fight, anything can happen, one punch, but we're going to try to position ourselves to win some money on Deontay Wilder.
And where's the line on that one?
Wilder's minus $2, and the take-back is plus 170 on Tyson Fury right now.
Wow, so you are certainly, because Chris is at minus 75 and plus $1.40, so you're certainly taking a position. One of my boxing guys that I run a lot of bets by, he was big on Tito last week as well. He's been pretty sharp over the years boxing and MMA. He goes, yeah, I've tried to bet against Wilder the last three fights, so don't ask me. Unsuccessful.
Well, he he was life or death in his fight against Ortiz. I think that was about a year ago, or he looked like he was done, and he was a big favorite in that fight, much bigger favorite than he is on Saturday. But he was able to land a huge knockout punch. Wilder has unbelievable power, so he always has that chance to end the fight at any moment. And the winner of this fight most likely is looking at a bigger fight in April against Anthony Joshua, and that would be, I think, the biggest heavyweight fight of at least biggest heavyweight boxing fight of at least the last decade. If Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury wins this fight and then fights Anthony Joshua in the spring.
All right, bud. Excellent stuff as always. Good luck with the pick for Mr. Musburger, and we'll catch you back here next week.
All right, you guys have a good weekend.
You too. All right, thanks to John Murray and thanks to Phil Steele. And we have the bonus guest this week, like I mentioned, with the change in our taping schedule. So we'll have Mike Clay with three NFL props coming up next. But first, a word from one of our sponsors.
Talk nerdy to me.
After a week hiatus for the holiday and really our scheduling issues, Mike Clay, Fantasy Insider, is back with us.
It was good. I mean, you had some turkey at least, right?
I did.
A little turkey?
Our cafeteria does it.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
And not quite. I would say today's special is better. Sushi tacos.
Wow.
So we got like some
salmon,
ahi, salmon, pokey, whatever. There's a bunch of stuff there into a bed of rice and seaweed. It's awesome.
Okay, well, I love tacos and I love sushi, so it's one of them things where you combine them and they're not as good, but we'll find out.
No, it's good. It's good.
It is good.
I've already tried it, so I'm excited for that.
All right.
You know, Thanksgiving was good, and you know, obviously we had a bunch of football. And
yes,
look, anytime someone's dominant in a space, you're going to get competitors. We have a new guy on the pod, the Prince of Props, is helping John Murray, the odds maker, with a prop a week, and he hit the big one last week. I don't want
what
you to
that?
Feel the heat.
I don't. Don't worry. I'm not worried.
His high school buddy, the Prince of Prop. It was Colt McCoy over 1.5 touchdowns, combined touchdowns, interceptions.
Well, that's funny because I had Colt McCoy over 19.5 completions in our article, our preview that was up on the site, and that hit as well, bringing us to 8-3.
There you go.
For the season. So, yeah, I'm not feeling pressure.
No Wally Pipp here.
I'm not worried about it.
No, we did have to move you. That's all on me and the way the prop sheets come out on a Tuesday night. So, yeah, there's no phased out of Mike Clay here. This is just a scheduling issue he had to. So you've done really well, obviously, on the podcast. You've done exceptionally well on the website. And we have three, like, really good games, at least two very good games, Thursday night, Sunday night, and then I think the Monday night's just interesting and maybe a play-out game for the Eagles and Redskins. We'll see. I think, you know, maybe nine wins that division, so maybe it's not a play-out game. But nonetheless, compelling games. Let's start with the Thursday nighter. Saints have been obviously so dominant, so explosive, bearing every team, even covered the 13.5 a week ago on Thanksgiving, and they've covered 9 straight, but they're facing a Dallas team that's covered 3 straight and playing well defensively. What are your findings telling you about the props here?
Yeah, I have a 31-25 in favor of the Saints on the road against Dallas, and that's 31 points for the Saints against a defense. It's pretty good. I mean, they have some serious personnel on that side of the ball. Byron Jones is quietly broken out as one of the best corners in the NFL. What a great job by them to move him from safety to corner. Obviously, great linebackers. So we'll see if some of them hurt guys play in this game. But nonetheless, I think they could sort of keep this offense in check a little bit, just relative to where they've been as of late. That's not saying much, but Breeze is at – the line here is 298.5 passing yards in this game at minus 110. I think he falls short of that. I think he ends up at 268. That's where I have him projected. He's been under 299 in 6 of 11 games this season. The exceptions, I mean, look at the exceptions. Look at the games, the 5 that he's gone over that mark. The Philly blowout at home, which was just a ridiculous game where he was super efficient against a beat-up secondary. The shootout with the Rams, obviously he had to throw a ton in that game. He was super efficient at home in that night game against the Redskins. And then the shootout.
That was Monday night, right?
The Monday night game, right? And then the shootout with the Falcons and then the Tampa Bay loss in that freak week one game. I think that's the last time they lost, right?
So right when they trailed and stuff.
Right. I don't necessarily think we're going to have one of them bizarre games here again. Against a pretty good defense on the road. They have leaned more on the run since Mark Ingram has come back from suspension. That should keep Breeze numbers in check a little bit. He's averaging 285 this season. And we've also, if you look at the tendencies against the Cowboys defense, you see offenses trying to run the football against them. That may be the case again this week. The Saints, the 7th run heaviest offense in the NFL.
That's my favorite stat, that other teams that have faced the Cowboys feel they can find success on the ground versus through the air. Now, obviously, those teams that were doing that didn't have the aerial attack and the quarterback that the Saints have. But nonetheless, that is a good sort of lean there.
Yeah, and the Saints have tried to run again, just like last year, and actually more so than last year. They're a very run-heavy offense. Again, seventh run-heaviest in the league if you adjust for game script. So, you know, they've been, some of it is because they're leading in the second half if you just look at their run pass-run ratio. But again, if you adjust for that, they're still one of the run-heaviest teams in the league. They're trying to protect Brees a little bit and run the football, keep it balanced.
All right. It's never fun to bet under on a Drew Brees or even a Saints game. Anything
trust
under.
Me. These make me nervous.
But there's a reason the line's that high, and it's since it's a high-profile game, right. You're going to get a little bit of a juice on the over in the yard, so you're probably getting even more value than you normally would maybe on a Sunday if you had some props on those afternoon games. Let's go to Sunday. The flexed Chargers, Steelers. This is a big weekend for you because your team is playing Monday night, the Eagles, but really your other team, the Chargers, the team you – every year say, hey, they're a sleeper, they're going to win the AFC, or you project them the Super Bowl. Now they're actually legit.
Yeah, they are. And well, it wasn't every year. It was last year. It was the year I wrote the piece.
I like
and
to say every year.
Yeah, that's okay. Everybody says that. They said, oh, you're the biggest Chargers homer. Everybody thinks I'm a Chargers fan. I do a spot every Wednesday in San Diego. Like, everybody thinks I love the Chargers. But it was just last year. I mean, you could see it coming. They were a better team than their record last year. I think we could all agree on that. Just had some bizarre luck. But nonetheless, we've seen it really come to fruition this season. Now they get Joey Bosa back. This is a good football team. Phillip Rivers, the line here is 295.5. So very much like Drew Brees, they're expecting him to be right around 300 yards. It's at minus 110 either way. What makes me nervous about this one is if Pittsburgh does jump ahead, like 14-0, 10-0, and they start throwing the football a ton, the Chargers, he could clearly get past 300 easily. But I think that's a good team, and I think they will stay competitive in this one, keep the offense balanced, and I have Rivers projected for 265. Now, he's averaging 284 this season. That's with a career-high 9.1 yards per attempt mark. That is hard to sustain that sort of number, over 9. I mean, it's hard to get over 8 and keep that up, so that's tough. You also look at the Steelers' defense. They're allowing, Doug, 6.9 yards per attempt. That's fourth best in the NFL. I mean, they started slow defensively. I don't think people realize that. They're not allowing much efficiency through the air. Rivers has fallen short of this mark in 7 of 11 games that season. And last year, he was under in 10 of 17 games. The Chargers also a very low-volume offense, 29th in offensive snaps this season, and also because they've been ahead so often, are the fourth run-heaviest offense. So there's really a lot here, a lot of reasons to think that Rivers will have a hard time going over 300 or over 295, I should say. The biggest one, your defense for it, for going over, would be, again, you just expect them to fall behind. They're playing, you know, he has to throw it 40 times, and he hits that mark.
Well, a couple questions. Status of Melvin Gordon, how does that impact Phillip Rivers?
Not too much. I mean, we've seen one game this year without Gordon, and it was a very low volume. I think it was their lowest volume game of the year. They ran 48 plays against the Titans in that London game, and we saw a lot of Austin Eckler. We saw an attempt to run the football, but again, there just wasn't much volume, so not a ton to take away from it. But I don't think they're going to throw it more just because they don't have him. They have Austin Eckler. We saw Justin Jackson last week. He looked good, the rookie. So they have some options there, and I don't expect a major change. They haven't been a super run or a super pass-heavy offense over the past decade. During the Phillip Rivers era, a lot has been on Rivers' back, but they've always been sort of a balanced offense.
What do you have as your final score projection?
27-25 Steelers.
All right, that's good. Because on the podcast yesterday, because you got me nervous about all this ball control, passer, I have over 51.5, so 27-25 will get there.
52.
It'll be a bit of a sweat, but it'll get there.
Yeah, should be close, yeah.
So in the line four, so I was interested when you were saying, or 3.5, I should say, when you were saying that they could fall down early. Now, it's not like they're double-digit underdogs, so that's obviously more unlikely than when there is a big spread.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's not like Arizona.
Like the Saints have a better chance of being up 2 touchdowns, so to speak.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, there's actually a lot of road favorites this week, which is really interesting. This could be a fun week in the NFL. There's a ton of them.
Yeah, be careful with those super teasers out there. There's you should probably be catching up. So I don't know. I mean, favorites have been covering a lot this year. I shouldn't say that just universally. Double-digit favorites went 4-0 last weekend, and there's just been a lot of chalk, it seems, at least in the big games. I mean, look at the Saints. They're covering every week. Mm-hmm. That's been killing the books. I mean, Monday night, I talked to the house, for a couple houses, and they're like, yeah, we don't know anyone but the Titans. Like, they just took it on the chin with the Texans.
Wow, really? Let me ask you this. I noticed my picks this week, I always pick the against the spread just for, you know, the site and for, you know, for fun as well. I found myself picking a lot of the road teams this week. with, you know, whether they're getting points or giving points. I have a lot of road teams this week. Would that make you nervous?
It should make you nervous in the NFL, but things have changed, as you know from your analytics and spreadsheets, is that the NFL is different than what once was. And
true.
Offenses are, I don't know, I just feel like there's such an advantage, a competitive advantage right now if you have that good of a quarterback. Defenses, there is no, we saw that in the Monday night game with the Chiefs and Rams. Like, I didn't think it was bad defense.
No.
I thought those were just great throws and great schemes, and if you can protect, these guys can put it anywhere, and you can only cover a good receiver for so long.
Yeah, offensive scheming and having a good quarterback, and it's so important. If you have both, I mean, look out. Just look what Indianapolis is doing even right now, the Chiefs, the Rams. I mean, the Patriots are pretty much scoring as they normally do. They just haven't taken the step up like everyone else has. They've just been passed out by their offenses. They're not doing much different, and it's showing up. They're unable to keep up with some teams.
And we're all kind of surprised, but like, I don't think we should, because last year, I've said it all year on the podcast, and I apologize to our listeners who think it's a broken record, but last year was an outlier with all these quarterbacks, bad quarterbacks going to the playoffs. Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles, it was all these other injuries. I mean, that division with Jacksonville, that team only won 10 games in a division that didn't have Luck and didn't have Deshaun Watson. Like, they're not that good of a team, and they happen to go to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, and offense was trending up for a long time and just plummeted down. That's what makes this year's, what do you want to call, surge, even more improbable. But again, you talk about the health of the quarterbacks. That's one. And two, I think, is probably the rule changes a little bit,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. And schematically, look what's going on with Cleveland, exactly. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Baker Mayfield takes over, and he's playing well, and then they switch OCs, and look what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look what happened with the Rams and Jared Goff. We labeled him a bust under Jeff Fisher. Sean McVay, a wizard, comes in, and all of a sudden the guy's in the MVP discussion.
Yeah, remember when McVay got there, we were all like, well, they're going to go after Kirk Cousins, right?
Right.
Goff's not the answer. Look what he turned Goff into.
Right.
Do we even know how good Goff is? I'm not even sure.
No, I mean, look.
He looks great. But
yeah, he looks great, but when you have those – I mean, Alex Smith had a great year, we all think, a year ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then look what Mahomes does with those toys.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's how it's supposed to look. So maybe Alex Smith isn't that great. He just took advantage of some really great weapons and played effectively.
Yeah, I always was a Donovan McNabb apologist when Reed was there, but you almost wonder, like, man, you know, Reed has always gotten so much out of his quarterbacks, and then he gets Mahomes, who legit is just playing at an obscene level.
Reed's also better probably now than he was. He's probably borrowed some, you know, they share notes.
But I don't think it's terribly different than what he was doing last season, you know.
I'm talking McNabb, but, you know, I'm with you as a McNabb apologist to a certain extent.
Yeah. But I mean, Mahomes is just on a different level. So now you combine him with Reed and look what they're doing, just like Brady and Belichick and maybe McVay and Goff. Maybe Goff is a stud. I mean, he seems like he's playing well, but there's a lot to it, obviously.
I said it on the pod yesterday. I feel bad that Stafford didn't get a guy like Andy Reid or someone like that, because I feel like he hasn't evolved as a quarterback because he's had bad coaches, but he has the arm talent.
Yeah, that offense, it seemed like Jim Bob Cooter was getting them to that next step, and they've just plummeted this year. That offense has been terrible.
Right. All right, let's go to Monday night with your actual team. So instead of your mistress, that is the L.A. Chargers, you're going to wife.
The Browns are my team this year, so I feel great about that. It looked kind of bad early.
So that's your side piece.
Well, every year, why not? There's a whole bunch of them. Every year there's a new one, right?
Yeah.
But, I have a good track record with that. I'll pat myself on the back for this. It was the Raiders 3 years ago when I just got to ESPN full-time. They had that great season. Last year, I was all over I wrote two articles, two features for NFL, the Chargers and the Jags, which were both terrific. I also loved the Eagles, thought they would run away with that division.
Really?
Yeah. And then this year, it's the Browns, which I thought they would be pushing for 500. I thought they were way better. You know, everyone ranked them last.
I mean, look, there's a lot of steam on like the over 6 wins, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. There's a big talk amongst the sharps in Vegas, but around 500, it seems like a good forecast.
Well, that happened after my article,
right,
Doug? Everyone read that, and we're like, "Whoa, we need to get on this. Look at this Clay guy." That's what happened there, Doug. Come on.
All right, so you're going back to your wife here with the Eagles playing your true love, your original, true love. Your team playing against the Redskins on a Monday Night Football,
and I'm going to take the under on their points, right, because I watched them closely, and you can't trust their offense right now. The score I have is 23-19. The line is 25.5 points for the Eagles at -110.
Team total.
Team total for the, you know the lingo better than me. I'm just,
that's okay.
Just saying the numbers. So I think the smart move here is to go with the under on this. Just the way they've been producing. They have 5 total offensive touchdowns over their past 3 games. They've been under 3 touchdowns in 8 of 11 games. So it just hasn't been there. And that's despite Carson Wentz playing pretty well. I mean, he's been more conservative, but there's two problems with the Eagles this year, two that really stand out, at least statistically. Carson Wentz has been sacked more already this season than he was all of last season. And the other one is last year they had one of the best turnover margins in the NFL. They have one of the worst in the NFL this season, and it's mostly the defense's fault. They're not producing turnovers, and I talked about this so often with the Browns in the offseason and the Redskins, calling them a sleeper for this reason. Turnover margin is crazy important. Roughly 50% of a team's win total is determined just by their turnover margin for the season, and the Eagles has been atrocious. The Browns has been good.
There's a school of thought that says it's more random than people want to accept.
To an extent, I think what I was looking at closely was those key quarterback changes that affected it. So Alex Smith going from the Chiefs to the Redskins was huge for Washington to keep them competitive
because
they weren't going to turn it over. Cleveland going from DeShone Kizer.
To you.
Exactly. But he was he was by far leading the NFL in interceptions last season. They switched to Tyrod Taylor, who could protect the ball. The Bills lose Tyrod, they made the playoffs because he didn't turn the ball over.
The Browns were competitive in the first couple weeks of the season.
They almost beat the Saints.
The snowball with the Steelers, the tie, the Saints game. Yeah, I mean, let's give some credit to Tyrod Taylor.
No question. And there's more to playing quarterback than just chucking, making long throws for touchdowns. He added value with his legs and he did not turn the ball over. And that kept an average football team. I think on paper they're an average team, which is a lot more than they were in previous years. He kept them close. So that's really important.
Three props, three unders.
Yeah, three unders here. Again, the Washington defense too, I'll just touch on that. Another reason to like the under on this one, two or fewer touchdowns allowed in 7 of 11 games this season. The exceptions to that were Andrew Luck. They gave up 3 to that Colts offense, 4 to Dak last week. We saw that game obviously on Thanksgiving, 5 to Matt Ryan and 6 to Drew Brees. So whenever they've not played studs outside of Dak, that offense was rolling. Obviously that long, it was close throughout that game until that long Amari Cooper touchdown. But again, 3 of the 4 games worse than 2 were against 3 stud quarterbacks. So, I like Wentz. I don't think he's quite in that category.
Right.
So I'm going to lean slightly towards the under on this one.
All right, my man. Well, good stuff. As always, good to have you back on the pod. We'll resume our normal taping schedule next week, but, appreciate your flexibility on the moving pieces here.
Always fun. Thanks, Doug.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right. Thank you to Mike Clay. Thank you to John Murray. And thank you to Phil Steele. And thank you to all of our listeners throughout the college football season and the NFL podcast, of course, as well. And we will continue next week with the NFL pod. We'll have a bowl preview edition as well. And plenty going on in the sports world as legalization ramps up. Rhode Island just joined the party, making it 8 states as we approach 2019. Exciting times here. So go check out the plays from the Prince of Props, and I'll have some as well on Twitter. We'll tweet those out. I'll be on SportsCenter around 9:20, 9:30 a.m. on Saturday for my college football plays. Phil Steele, Stanford Steve, and the Bear, Chris Felica, will have their plays on ESPN.com, Chalk section, and Insider as well. I'll have my column back up on Friday. So finishing the year strong. Thanks to everyone. And remember, we taped the NFL podcast on Tuesday, so it's already been posted. Just Mike Clay's prop bets were today. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.